if I truly believed there was a God, how would my life change?
Like if you had some kind of proof that kind of made you believe it.
Sure. Well, any kind of God could exist. So I don't know if I would, whatever I would convince myself of to do differently, maybe I would do that. Like if I convinced myself again that Christianity is true, I guess I'd probably go to Mass. But I don't do anything today that I used to not do, when I was a Christian. I would say I'm a better person than I used to be, but it's not because I used to be religious. I just become less ignorant as I get older. Every year I get older. It's really weird. Somebody should figure out a way to stop that. But no, I mean, my answer is it depends what religion I convince myself is true, I guess.
Well, I guess I'm specifically talking about Christianity.
You're specifically talking about Christianity? Okay. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I stopped going to church when I went to college, but I considered myself a Christian. I never thought deeply about being a Christian. I think that my moral intuitions just were what they were because I was lucky enough to be born only slightly psychopathic, not deeply psychopathic. Because one of the instrumental things in my deconstruction was talking to Christians and realizing how many people think everybody that's not a Christian is going to hell. Like people who I was very, very good friends with, listening to them say stuff like, oh yeah, all the Jews go to hell. And it was like, I don't want to be whatever this is. So, no, I probably really wouldn't be very different at all. I've loved science ever since I was really young, so.
Yeah, I love science too. I believe like literally 99% of science. Like I believe a lot of it's true. There's just a few fundamental things that I just don't agree with.
Yeah, I remember when I was, how old was I? This yellow house that I lived in Clear Lake, South Dakota. Across the street, Philip Smith lived across the street, and he was my best friend for a lot of years. And we both like loved dinosaurs. We had a lot of dinosaur toys and like Jurassic Park stuff, and we would play dinosaurs like all the time. And one time we were playing, and he said, "You know that humans and dinosaurs live together, right? And it was only, and the Earth is only 10,000 years old." And I was like, "What the fuck are you talking about? Dinosaurs lived 65 million years ago. We all know this." And he said, "Nuh-uh, they told us at church." And I was just like, "Well, your church is wrong then." And I was a Christian back then, or I was taken to church by my mom, and I guess I would have called myself a Christian. But yeah, I mean, I was always capable of believing. The only thing I stopped believing in when I stopped being a Christian was free will and God. But so, yeah.
Yeah, so you don't believe in free will?
No.
Interesting. Yeah, because when I like made myself believe there was no God, I was like, okay, where's my train of thought going to go? What am I going to do? Like, how am I going to feel? What's my worldview going to be? And I noticed the one thing that was fundamental in that was like, okay, if there's no God and we're here by chance, then what, why am I, like, I guess morality would be, in a nutshell, would be a big issue for me, because I just, because in your worldview, when we die, the lights turn off and that's it, right?
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then so many people in this world get so ahead by being immoral, not necessarily hurting people, but they're able to get ahead by putting more morality aside and doing certain things. And I thought, then why, because I consider myself a really good person. I try to help people. I'm really polite. You know, I go out of my way to help people and stuff like that. And I just asked myself, like, I wouldn't be doing so many of the things that I do if I believed there was no God. If that makes any sense.
Well, I mean, I doubt that. I think good people are. Hitchens has that great quote. If it weren't for religion, good people would do good things and bad people would do bad things. But if you want a good person to do bad things, you need religion. Now, you can make the argument that if you want to make a good person do, or a bad person do good things, you need religion. Well, I mean, no, I think just education and plenty of, I think you can reform bad people in lots of ways, but a person of sound mind, getting them to believe that they're doing something in the interest of like a cosmic battle of good versus evil. I feel like you kind of need religion for that. And there are other things that are quasi-religious. Like, I've never read the book Ordinary Men, but it's a book about how, like a lot of people, like Nazi war soldiers, were really just regular people. They just happened to be convinced of things that allowed them to commit atrocities. And it's sort of like a look inward at human nature, or that's my understanding of the book. I really want to read it sometime because I like thinking of learning about how people think. But I mean, like, you know, me, I'm godless and I rape and kill all the people I want to, which is none ever. So.
Right. All right. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I could go into, but I was kind of curious on what your thought would be if you, I didn't know you were Christian, honestly. That's why I was asking that. Now that I know you're Christian, that kind of changes everything.
No. I used to be.
Yeah. You used to be Christian. And you were Christian, okay. Did you truly feel that, like, did you truly feel a connection with God, or that there was a God? Did you really, really feel it, not just believe it?
Most of the time, not, but I live a boring life. But there are specific moments I remember. There was some moments when I went to a Bible camp once. I actually really liked it. There were some moments then, but that was just being part of a group and doing a. I mean, like, if you like went to witness like a ceremony for like some like different culture, like some like indigenous culture, like ceremony, and like really got into like the music or whatever they're doing, you could like, you'd probably get a sense of euphoria. And I just think that was the same kind of thing. Another thing was, when my half sister Jennifer died, her funeral was in the middle of January in the middle of Nebraska, which there aren't like, You'd be better off in Antarctica than Nebraska in the middle of January half the time, right? But for whatever reason, on the day of her funeral, it was like almost 60 degrees. Like, it was just this absolutely beautiful day. And I remember thanking God for that, which it's like, well, God doesn't control the weather. But for some reason at that time, that's how I felt about it. So
through your Christian life, did you have doubts throughout that whole time?
There were things I never believed in, like what my friend told me, you know, but that didn't make me stop and think like, oh, this, none of this crap is probably true. That never really crossed my mind when I was younger. If it had, I probably would have deconstructed way before that.
Got it. So it wasn't a slow build up to deconstruction. It was just, was there one instance that made you like, okay, boom, this is just not real?
I would say it happened in like 5 years ish.
Oh, I see. Like a build up of 5 years.
Yeah.
And what about now? Do you ever now like think, oh, maybe there is a God?
I mean, I think there could be.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah, that's all I had, man. I was just curious on what your thoughts were on that.
How did we became male and female then?
Well, it's way before.
Different beings that are dependent on each other.
Right. So it's not the case that before there were humans, there was no such thing as male or female biological sexes. Those were a thing before humans. So it's not.
Yeah, I understand. It's everywhere. But how did that came to being?
I have no idea. I bought a book about the evolution of sex like last year, because I wanted to try to learn more about this, but it turned out to be a book about the evolution of like actual sexual reproduction by animals, not like how did the different gametes form and stuff like that. So no, we don't really know that. I mean, there are all kinds of organisms that can do sexual and asexual reproduction at the same time, so they can fertilize.
Yeah, I know, like seahorses and those, but
no, I mean, not seahorses.
Aren't they male and female at the same time?
No, the seahorse thing is really misunderstood, and it's really annoying. The male makes sperm, the female makes eggs. He fertilizes her eggs, but then she dumps them into a pouch that's on his body. So it's not like if we wanted to compare this with humans, it's not like the female injects the male with cells and then he becomes like fish don't get pregnant. I guess that's the simplest thing. There's no such thing as pregnancy really in well, okay, that's not really true, because there are a lot of fish that give life birth, like a lot of sharks. But the male doesn't have a uterus or a womb. So it's not what people think it is. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
I should have put that in my book.
That was new to me, and I need to look it up and read more about it.
Right.
But I've heard people saying, like, seahorses are, like, they have both genders at the same time.
No.
I've heard
there are animals that do, but not them.
Yeah, but my question was like, how did we became these two different sexes that are dependent on each other?
And yeah, I don't know. I mean, what I would suspect is what first happened is, because we see this in some organisms, they developed a way where some of their cells only have half the DNA that other cells do, and then those cells would fuse together, and then that becomes the embryo of a new organism. And then at some point along the way, that process or that, I don't know, method, whatever you want to call that, it would have been among all organisms, but for some reason it became different in different halves of the population. And then from there, biological sexes became a thing. But that kind of event would have happened something like more than 600 million years ago. So we're just never going to have genetic or fossil evidence to really back it up, which is kind of a shame, but I mean, never say never, but that one's pretty tough.
Okay. I got another one for you. Right. Like, human bodies have my English is not my best top, but I'll try my best. It's not bad, but it's decent. I'll try my best. Humans have cells that renew itself, like skin cells renew itself. And bone cells, they take some periods of time, but they do it. And your body is like programmed to do it. How does that kind of programming happen in nature?
How does it happen in nature? I mean,
without somebody programming your body to do it.
Well, I mean, the cells do this based on there's a really complex symphony of the way gene expression is turned on and off, but it's comes down to I don't know what you call it. It's not chemotaxis, but it's just down to chemicals that cells secrete to neighboring cells, which sort of trigger those neighboring cells to either increase or decrease their rate of cellular division. Or to just go into complete senescence, which a lot of our cells do eventually. We know where the genes for like creating body plans and body parts in animals are. The thing about how they're turned on or off, I mean, we know to a pretty good extent how they're activated, but precisely how they quote unquote know how to turn on or to turn off at certain points to like stop so you don't grow like indefinitely into a random. I guess we don't really know that, but we understand the process very well all the same.
Traffic. Okay, this is going to be interesting.
I have some thoughts on this, but not many.
So I look at like civilization on a whole, and we've solved a lot of problems. And as if you think of like payment systems and being able to tap a credit card and make a payment, and people will go through long, onerous processes like to file for a passport. People wait in line. People can follow rules fairly well in society so that we can function properly, right? Why is it that simple basic things for traffic like zipper merging, leaving space in front of you, when I look at a highway or a freeway, as you guys say in the States, and there's no off-ramp congestion and we're in stop and go traffic, I can't fathom or understand why that is occurring other than people just not following like simple things like leaving space, not stopping, and like there's things like double diamond intersection. I don't like what is your ideas on why it's so horrible?
I if I ever became supreme overlord, I will have a rule that if you're driving on the freeway and it says left lane closed ahead, and what you do is drive 20 miles an hour faster than everybody in the left lane to try to up to the part where it starts to get cut off so you can cut in front of people, death penalty. I'm actually against the death penalty, but you will get it for that. And that will basically be the only crime where you get the death penalty. So
you know that both lanes should be filled up though.
What's that?
Like that left lane that's going to close should be filled all the way to where it's closed, and then you're supposed to zipper merge. Like,
yeah, that's what it is. That's what they do. But what people do is they drive really fast to try to get ahead of that.
That's stupid.
I think the problem with the way traffic happens from a micro perspective is that everybody is acting in their own selfish self-interest, and mm-hmm. it's kind of amazing that traffic works at all. considering that, but you can kind of see, like, I think we actually do a pretty good job in America of like setting the system up and educating people on it, because like you go to other countries where it's a free-for-all and the traffic is just unthinkably bad. It's just a nightmare. People like literally driving down the wrong side of the road because they're like, oh fuck the traffic, and then they do so, like, as bad as it is here, people don't do shit like that. But like, go on.
I was gonna say, like, in a line, like you're at a store, right?
Yeah.
You line up and you one at a time and you pay, and no one tries to like cut, like run to the front and cut in and like try to say, oh, I'm buying myself. Like, but in cars, that happens. Is it because like that mentality of I'm in my car, no one's gonna say nothing to me, or I don't have to confront anybody kind of thing? Like, how do
Yeah, I think that's a big part. I think that's a big part of it. I think there are a lot of reasons for it. Not all of them always apply to every driver, but some people treat driving as like an adrenaline rush. I live in California. The worst drivers I've ever seen in my life live here. They treat every highway as if it's Fury Road or their own personal Grand Prix track. It's mm-hmm. just, it's unthinkable how stupid everybody is. There's also this very... And I think this gets to another underlying series of problems, is that everybody in America acts like they don't have time for anything. And I think a lot of that is the entire purpose of your existence is to have a paycheck kind of mentality that Americans have. Like in like France, famously, they only have like a 30-hour work week or something like that. Retirement is only 60 or 62 there versus 65 here.
You guys didn't change it to 67 yet?
it's being threatened to bump up to that, but I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens. The biggest problem with traffic is that I think there's this really cool YouTube channel that you should check out. It's called More Than it's called More Than Bikes or Not Just Bikes or something like that. And the creator of that YouTube channel is like a, he's like an urban developer, and he just talks about how he hates the way cities are designed. And in particular, one of his biggest grievances is that the city is designed around the car instead of like the person. So for example, you know, where I live, despite the fact that I live in an area of my city that's like all brand new development, my house was literally built this year, and there's all these grocery stores and stuff being built right around me, and it's pretty cool and it's pretty exciting. And despite the fact that all that stuff is within like a square mile of where I am, it's still extremely impractical to walk to any of these places, because that's just, everything is built around all the shop. It's, you get a shopping center and it's like all these places inside of a massive sea of a parking lot, just like this enormous parking lot, and then a shopping center like surrounding it. Just like restaurants and stuff like that. Outdoor dining isn't a thing. The sidewalks are not prioritized over roads. It's just kind of sad. And I think that's like, in America, it's all about the big box store. It's not about the mom and pop. And it's not so much like the neighborhoods, in particular, the town I live in, and this is kind of true with American cities overall, but like a city like New York is a very, very old, for America, it's a really old city. And so another problem we'd have to talk about is public transportation. We'll see if we get there. But like in New York, you can walk to all of these places because there are these little intersected little neighborhoods where it's like, yeah, in this place you got the dry cleaning place and all the cafes and the little shopping places. There's a whole bunch of small ones right here, and then you know, over there it's like that. Whereas where I live, so the city I live in has a population of about 150,000 people, and I'm originally from South Dakota, and the biggest city in South Dakota, Sioux Falls, is a little bit bigger than that. But I compared the two cities, and that one in South Dakota is twice the square mileage as this city is.
And that's you're in right now.
Yeah. And that's because the cities here, what it is just endless neighborhoods. It's nothing but they just develop housing. The houses are so close together that if you reach your hand out your window, you can hold the hand of your neighbor if they're doing the same thing. Luckily, my neighborhood isn't like that, but there are some ones being built just a little ways from me where it's like literally, you could hold hands with your neighbor if you both.
It's even worse that there's townhomes and semi-detached where like it's row homes where like you're attached to the house beside you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, townhomes are kind of cool and they can be okay. I am very loud, so it doesn't work for me and it wouldn't work for my neighbors. But what was I going to say? So it's like literally just cramming neighborhoods together. And then like we have all the stores and stuff like that. This is kind of what I was talking about earlier, but those are just centralized and put into one part of town. Like the south part of the town I live in is just absolutely nothing, but the whole main road on either side is just giant shopping center after giant shopping center with all the big box stores. And so like, you know, neighborhoods aren't designed like that. Like there are lots of cute, especially the newer neighborhoods there. They have like some like really small parks in them, and they have nice sidewalks and some walking areas, but there's no incentive to walk anywhere because you can't do like, it doesn't accomplish anything. I have to go buy groceries, and the only way to do that is to, you know, get in my car. The biking and walking infrastructure is just not prioritized in any way. And then traffic just never gets any better because this is most famously been a failure in Houston, Texas. But they keep at, like, you should look up the highways in Houston, Texas. It's unthinkable.
There's lots of highways. The more roads or real estate they give to cars, the more cars get on the road.
Yes. But they try to add another lane because they think that'll ease congestion. But all that does is create more drivers. And so it will never work. And probably the biggest thing that would help is if public transportation was actually a thing and an investment in America. And I don't know, it just maybe never will be for weird reasons.
Yeah, but I just think, like, when it comes to public transportation, it's mostly the experience sucks, like, while you're on the public I just feel like people behave differently in different settings. Like, in the shopping mall, you'll walk around, it'll be full of people, and you'll feel like it's a good experience. But on the bus, the person beside you smells, and they're trying to eat something, and someone's playing music, and it's just, yeah. it's not as, they got to do something about, like, rules on the bus. And I swear to you, traffic, especially in places where it's a freeway and there's no off-ramp, like traffic backing up onto the freeway, there should be no reason for stop traffic on the freeway. The only reason is that people are cutting other people off and creating these like traffic stop, like one car stops, car behind him stops, and then it creates like a row of cars stopping, and then they all have to start up again, right? If people had left space, two cars worth of space, and nobody would cut in front to eat that space up, right? We would be fine. I don't understand why, as a society, we cannot leave two cars of space in front of you.
Because everybody's in too much of a hurry. That's probably really why it is. I've seen these videos where, like, they have cars, you know, they do it. It's like an experiment. They just create a giant donut for these cars to drive in. And they just ask one of the drivers to just tap their brakes slightly. But then the person behind them hits their brakes, but is on their brakes for longer because they don't know what the person in front of them is doing. And then that ripple effect causes the donut to come to a complete stop. So that's a phenomenon that just naturally occurs. And I think it's what Matthew in the chat is talking about, I think. But yeah, and I don't know.
It's not solvable. Like, I don't understand. It's probably, and when you go to driving school, they just tell you like how to turn left, how to turn right. They don't tell you about like traffic. Like, that should be like a whole section on like, and it should be like, you should get tickets for that stuff. I don't understand.
There's probably a way to like engineer roads and stuff where it works better, you know, like having roundabouts instead of stoplights and things like that. I mean, freeway traffic, that's a tricky one. I feel like the only solution to that is just to get fewer people on the road. And that's going to mean things like, you know, I think the average commute for an American is like an hour. And, you know, a lot of that is because most people live in cities, but cities are unlivable price wise. So people are commuting these vast distances. So if we can figure out, I got to tell you something so fucking funny. I went to see Bill Burr last night, and his opening comedian told this really funny joke. He's like, I know what it was kind of like a good comedian weaves a bunch of like the next narrative builds upon what you were saying before that, even though like they don't really have anything to do with each other. But he starts talking about serial killers. He's like, this country's soft. We need more serial killer. Or we need a new serial killer here in California, because it's been a while. And then he said, and you know what? It would solve the housing unaffordability crisis too. Get a few serial killers, property values are going to plummet. And so I was like, that could actually be true. Not something I actually would advocate for, but I feel like nothing devalues property more than a serial killer. I was like, well,
TikTok, maybe. There's actually graphs about that where it says like, we need to talk more about the demise of the American escape. Like,
that's pretty funny. Yeah. So, I mean, the problem is, I don't know. I don't think there fundamentally is a problem. I think it's multifaceted. I can't really think of another reason off the top of my head, but that's what I would. I would say it's a combination of all those things.
If anybody in the chat or you want to take, have you ever heard of the double diamond intersection where there's no left turn? Like, it's hard to explain, but go look it up. Like, double diamond intersection.
I'll do it right now.
So it's an intersection that kind of removes left turns and creates like a better flow of traffic through like intersections instead of traffic lights. And I feel like someone should have looked at that and been like, wow, this is amazing. Why don't we start building these things? But I think it's
oh, that's interesting. So the right and the left's traffic flip-flops in order to do that. That's cool.
It's really cool. And I don't understand why, like, someone doesn't look at that and say, hey, we can save so much time for people if we built more of those things. But I digress from there.
I think a big part of it, what I see where I live, is a lot of the congestion issues are, you can blame people for not preparing for them, but I don't think that's exactly fair because it's kind of hard to predict. So, like, for example, I live on the absolute north edge, and literally only a few years ago, I've only lived here for 5 years, but all the people I talk to that have lived here, they're like, man, this whole part of town, it was nothing but walnut orchards and cashew orchards just a few years ago. So it was literally just like, it was like you were in the country where I live. And there are a lot of roads that have been here for a while that are just these single lane roads, like one lane going each way. So for example, this main road here that gets you onto the freeway, the 99. Can you hear
motorcycle?
That?
Motorcycle.
Yeah. I hate those assholes. Anyways, there is a road that goes like from where I live all the way to the freeway. And in the past, it was like you were technically outside of town when you drove on that road. But now this is the part of town that's been developed. So there's like a brand new huge middle school there. There's an Amazon factory, or not a factory, but a warehouse there now. There's an enormous UPS facility out there. So I used to take that road to go to work a couple of years ago. And yeah, it would get really bad because there's now all this traffic driving there, but it's still on that one lane road. And they're starting to widen the road to two lanes in some places, but it eventually gets to this part where it does cut through farmland. So they'd have to either buy that farmland or just do eminent domain, because they'd have to cut out part of it to do that. And maybe that'll never work. So it's like, yeah, nobody, like, it just sort of accidentally became this big issue. And I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, it's something that bothers me because I just feel like we take so much effort into fixing all these other things, and no one's really like taking a serious look at that. And I really do believe if people were just punished and learned that, like, this is what's socially acceptable, like leaving space, using, like, if all the cars were autonomous, I bet you right now traffic would be reduced by like 70%.
It could be. You know what I think of that's like really funny? Do you ever watch like auto racing?
Yeah, I'm a huge F1 fan.
Oh, cool. So, like, you know, when the light turns green, the car in the back doesn't wait for the car in front of it to start moving. They just slam on the accelerator pedal right away, right?
Yes.
I always think to myself, like, when I'm at a light, like the other day, I was at a red light and there were only like 10 cars in front of me. I didn't get to go through the intersect. It turned green and it took so long for all the cars in front of me to finally start moving that I didn't get through it. I was like, what the fuck? And I just thought to myself, like, you know, when the light turns green, if everybody accelerated at the same rate, it would be fine. Yeah, but that's impossible to get people to do. It wouldn't be safe in the long run. And it's just impossible to do. But yeah, I'm just like, it just, traffic fucking does not work with human cognition. It just doesn't. But
the thing about that makes it easier. If you weren't bumper to bumper when the light changed, if you had two car lengths, two car lengths of space, you would all be able to go and it wouldn't be a big deal. And that's, even when you're on the freeway, just two car lengths of space in front of you avoids you doing unnecessary stopping. The problem is people love to fill those spaces. So they will change lanes to be, I got to cut in front of me so that fill that space that I'm leaving on purpose so that we can have good flow of traffic. But I don't understand why we can't educate people that that's mandatory. Like, you need leave two cars worth of space and flow instead of hitting the brakes, and we would have been fine. But
yeah, you know what else makes it so much more difficult is that people are buying huge cars nowadays trucks and SUVs are by far the most popular new vehicles now and have been for years. So just think of, like, if people were just driving sedans and mm-hmm. two doors, which most people, there's no reason not to, just think of how tighter that would make everything and more efficient it would be too.
True. Also, I know you had a YouTube the other day with someone. You said the new stupidest person, and you were talking about air density.
Yeah.
So I understand cold air is denser than hotter.
Mm-hmm.
But also, cold air falls, hot air rises.
Yeah.
While you move higher, it becomes the air gets colder.
Yeah, it gets colder, then hotter, then colder, then hotter. It's a really weird phenomenon.
It's really just colder though, isn't it? As you get higher in altitude.
Well,
it's
no,
like four degrees per like 100 feet or something, and it gets colder.
Yeah, but let me pull up something so I can give you the numbers. But no, it actually does get hotter. But you, it's many, many, many miles up.
Because I know the ground heats, the ground gets heated by the sun. It absorbs it, then heats the air at the bottom.
Yeah.
What I'm confused about is that, is it like when we talk dense, is it the molecules are moving faster in the hot air?
Yeah.
In the cold air is dense, it's like, I have a hard time understanding why the cold air is, like, the hot air is less dense than the cold air, but warmer. Like,
well, as things,
the amount of things are moving faster in there, like,
I'm not sure if I 100% understand. So, like, when things heat up, they expand, and gases do that more extreme than other forms of matter do. So, but yeah, when you add thermal energy to something, its molecules, like, literally speed up. Like, mm-hmm. we can't see it, but if you could see the atoms on a stove coil as it's glowing red hot, you would see that the molecules that make up that metal are actually vibrating faster than normal. And then in a gas, what that does is it causes the molecules to be more spread out as well. Now, it's kind of weird, like, well,
you would think that because it's denser, it would fall like more, like, because cold air does fall, like people have air conditioning sinks. That comes. Yeah. And then hot air like moves up, but then you would think that if it's less dense, it would be the other way around, kind of thing, right? Like it would be the hot air sitting up top and the cold air underneath, kind of thing, right? Because that's if there was no pressure, that's what it would be, right?
Yeah. So it is weird the way that happens. The biggest reason, or one of the biggest reasons why, well, I shouldn't even say one of the biggest because I'm not sure, but one of the biggest contributing factors is that as you go up, the air is less dense. So that makes...
Less dense would mean hotter, right?
No, well...
You see how...
Yeah, I see the confusion. All things being equal, if you take a pocket of air and heat it up, it expands and gets thinner. But what's happening with the atmosphere as you go up is different than that. It's the air is just simply less spread out, which means the air can't hold as much heat energy. That's the real thing. But yeah, like I said, it actually,
because you're saying it's getting more spread out, but then it's colder air also. So it's denser air because it's colder, I'm guessing, but
it's really because there's less air. So, like, for example, like, here's another weird thing.
How are we measuring density?
Density would be molecules per unit of volume. So, like, here's something weird. In space, the temperatures can be many hundreds of degrees, but that's just what we mean by that is that's how fast the molecules up there are moving. But the temperature of space is incredibly low because there's such a low density of those molecules. So the heat
and cold air is supposed to be dense.
Well, that's a comparison. those kinds of comparisons make more sense if you are comparing the same mass of air. So if I have a mass of air and I cool it down, it gets more contracted together. But if I take that same mass of air and heat it up, it expands. But in space, you know, you can say in space the heat energy, or the, it would be temperature actually, because temperature and heat mean two different things. The temperature in space can be extremely hot, but you're just describing what the basically the temperature of the individual molecules is, not the temperature of the volume in space that you're occupying. Whereas down on the surface, the temperature can be a lot higher, but the overall, The it's so weird because you can use temperature in two different ways. The heat energy is much greater, but the temperature is lower.
I can understand the reasoning behind it. It's just the if you have two areas, like a square meter of air, right?
Yeah.
Now, we're not talking about the actual volume as in like a water volume. We're talking about volume as in how many molecules are in that area.
Well, it's the volume of space, and then you can describe, you're not actually describing the volume of the particles in that space. It's just of the space. That's probably the easier way to think about it.
And it makes more sense when you look at it that way.
Right.
What was I going to say?
So I can give you, this is a slightly different example, but it illustrates the point. And I learned this from a YouTube channel called It's Okay to Be Smart, which is now just called Be Smart. But let's say we have two swimming pools, each filled with liquid nitrogen, extremely cold, right?
Yeah.
In one, we dump a boiling kettle of water. In the other one, we dump a giant ice cube that's like half the size of the entire pool, right?
Okay.
The one where we put the giant ice cube into, that liquid nitrogen is going to raise to a higher temperature than the other one. Because while the ice is much colder, there's so much of it that its potential, the ice is still over 100 degrees warmer than the liquid nitrogen. But because there's so much of it, when the temperatures reach equilibrium, it's going to raise the temperature of that way more than the other thing. That other thing, the temperature's a couple hundred degrees higher, but there's so little of it that the bottom only lifts a tiny bit and the top plummets. So that's the thing where heat and temperature, we use them the same way, but they really don't mean the same thing.
I think it's the density word, because the way I went to go read about it, it's like as the...
You got muted. I don't know what happened.
I'm getting phone calls that I'm ignoring. as the air rises, it becomes thinner, and the sun, it can't absorb as much solar energy, right? So...
Yeah, that's a big part of it.
The reason why I just don't like the wording of as it's going higher, it's getting colder, so it's supposed to be denser, but that's not really what we mean here, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because it's getting colder, but it's not, I don't, is it really denser up there?
No, it's less dense. The main reason it's getting colder is because the air is thinner. It's like, it's like if you wrapped yourself in a goose down blanket versus a sheet of silk. You're going to be hotter in the blanket.
The denser.
Yeah. The denser blanket will keep you warmer because it can trap more heat than the other thing can.
So cold is why do we refer to being cold air being denser than hot air? That's the reason why I don't like that.
Because it literally is. Yeah.
Yeah. Here we go. But you just said the denser you're covered with, the hotter you get.
The more energy it can trap, yes.
Yeah. So why is something cold dense? If it could trap, it should be able to trap more. I hate that. I know it's true, but so stupid word. It's got to be explained differently. It's more about the amount of molecules in a given area. They're denser. Like, the molecules are closer together in cold air than in hot air. They're more spread apart, or they're moving faster. Like, I think that's the way to put it. But I'm going to drop down. I have this phone call to take, but I'll come Sounds up good. With a better topic for next Sunday that's maybe intrigue you.
Okay. Yeah, fine with me.
Okay, see ya.